Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What you've given up for me?
Yes, Beverly. I have given up for you. Often I have given things up for you. I've made concessions for you.
Why do people say they give things up for me?
Beverly, our whole relationship has been about Elliot. Honestly. I would like for that not to be the case. I would like for things to be different.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen.
I'm also David Chen. We're twins. No, I'm Siddhant Adlakha.
Welcome to the podcast, and welcome to This Week in Streaming. Each week on This Week in Streaming, we cover a show that's new and interesting in the world of streaming right here on the Decoding TV podcast feed. We'll tell you if the show is worth watching, and eventually, as in today, we'll review and spoil and discuss the entire season of the show. Today, we're going to be discussing Dead Ringers, the entire first season, episodes 1-6. We've already seen the entire show. And next week, we'll be covering the final episodes of Mrs. Davis. But I do want to acknowledge that Siddhant Adlakha is not going to be here next week. He is going off to the Cannes Film Festival. And I want to start just really quickly by acknowledging Siddhant and saying a huge thank you to Siddhant for joining me for these last six episodes. I've had a lot of fun talking about Barry, Mrs. Davis, Dead Ringers with Siddhant. And also, just like experimenting with This Week in Streaming as a format, you know, we have a pretty specific format with like topics, overall thoughts, and so on. And Siddhant is just game for everything, very professional and very thoughtful and insightful. And I just wanted to say thank you for trying this out with me, Siddhant, and we really appreciate it. And we wish you the best as you go to the Cannes Film Festival to cover it. So thank you. And also, Siddhant, why don't you tell people where they can find more of your work from the Cannes Film Festival?
Sure. First of all, it's always a pleasure to talk to you about this stuff. So I really appreciate it. Really appreciate what you're doing with the show. And yeah, out of Cannes, you can find my work at, let's see, IndieWire, Truthdig, JoySauce, Inverse, and IGN. So a whole bunch of places.
Wow.
And I'm sure at some point, you know, I'll be back here on the podcast too.
Agreed. We have Dank Vossen stepping in next week to join us for Mrs. Davis, and I think there'll be other guests in the future, but I think I consider Siddhant part of the Decoding TV family, and so we'll be glad to have him back in the future. But kicking this off was quite a feat, and I always appreciate Siddhant taking my phone calls as I pitch him these wild ideas like, hey, I need you to watch 15 hours of television in the next, you know, in the next month. So thank you to Siddhant. Be sure to follow his work. He is, in my opinion, one of the best writers on TV and film on the internet. And we're really lucky to have him here on Decoding TV and This Week in Streaming. Okay. So, Siddhant Adlakha, what we're going to do today on the podcast, we have watched the entirety of Dead Ringers, season one on Prime Video. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say I don't think there's going to be season two. I think it's going to be a one-season show. Mm-hmm. We have also watched the David Cronenberg movie, Dead Ringers. And so we're going to talk about the season of the show, like as though you haven't seen the movie, and then we're going to talk about the movie and make some comparisons. So that is what is in store. But before we talk about what happens in the show, let's just give a one-sentence overall summary. Do you think people should watch Dead Ringers, or in the case of This Week in Streaming, finish watching Dead Ringers season one?
Sadly, no.
Whoa!
I know. I started out much more positive. But alas.
Oh, man. Siddhant, I love this show. I thought it was great. I had a great time with it. And yeah, it has some problems. Like there's some subplots that are so poorly done that it's almost laughable. Mm-hmm. But the direction is so strong. Rachel Weisz is so good. And there are just so many amazing, haunting, chilling moments that I forgive the show its missteps. So I am sorry you didn't love it, but I did, and I would recommend it so long as you have a stomach for it. You know,
yeah,
so
and,
long as
and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there is some pretty graphic stuff in the show, so just be aware of that. All right, let's talk about what happens in the remaining episodes of the show. We talked about the first two episodes last time. I'm going to list off some of the things that occur in episodes 3 through 6. After the Mantle twins convince Rebecca Parker to invest in them, they open their first birthing center, dubbed the Mantle Parker Center, where everything goes mostly well, except for a protester covering Beverly in blood. As Beverly's relationship with Genevieve blossoms and they begin discussing children, they organize a weekend away, but the separation anxiety causes Elliot to act out and throw a destructive house party where she appears to throw an old woman off her balcony, though she's not 100% sure it actually happened. In episode 4, the Mantles' parents, Linda and Alan, come to visit. We see flashbacks to Linda as a scared, imperfect mom. During their group dinners, both twins lash out. Beverly and Genevieve discuss moving in together, which makes Elliot try to sabotage their relationship, revealing to their parents that Beverly is pregnant and that she was the one who first kissed Genevieve. Elliot was the one who first kissed Genevieve. Beverly discovers that she and Genevieve are having twins, but unbeknownst to her, Elliot has also grown a pair of embryos in a lab using Beverly and Tom's DNA. Episode 5, while visiting their second center in Alabama, the twins are accompanied by a journalist working on a puff piece about them. Elliot, under the influence of drugs and alcohol, accidentally injures a patient during a C-section, pretty much tanking her career. And in episode 6, along with everyone else, Beverly separates herself, distances herself from a now-missing Elliot, and paints her in a bad light. Greta learns that the old woman's body was found in a gutter on a nearby rooftop, and Beverly eventually finds Elliot in her lab, where Beverly has Elliot deliver her babies and both kill and replace her, as Beverly has realized she will never be happy. In a post-credit scene, Elliot learns about the bereavement group that Beverly had been attending. So, that's a lot of stuff that happened in episodes 3 through 6 of the show. And let's start here. Dead Ringers touches upon a variety of different topics, including the poor state of women's healthcare in America, the relinquishment of public responsibilities from governments to billionaires and philanthropists, and how codependent relationships can easily become toxic. But at the end of the day, what do you think the show was really about? Which theme stood out most for you? I will say that I did not think I understood what the show was about until episode 6, which is not great, you know, but the whole time I'm thinking, like, what is the show trying to say? And I think ultimately it does come down to this relationship between Beverly and Elliot. It's about that relationship. It's about how it's incredibly codependent, how it's incredibly toxic. And I think to a large extent, it does a good job of illustrating it, but were there any themes that stood out for you, or do you have an opinion on what the show is about, Siddharth?
I agree with you that the show touches on these topics. And I think if there's one most prominent theme, it is probably the central codependent relationship, even though I have some thoughts on the relationship between that theme and the other themes. But yeah, I think for the most part, the stuff about, you know, women's healthcare and philanthropy and billionaires all ends up sort of background window dressing to a plot that ends up taking up a lot of room in a show that I think should and could have been more focused on that central relationship so that it didn't take you almost 6 hours to get a sense of what it's about.
Yeah, I agree. The word window dressing came to mind as well, because here's the thing, but that stuff is really well done, in my opinion. Like the Jennifer Ely character, like Jennifer Ely, who plays Parker. Yeah. I just think that is an awesome character. That is a really well-written character, extremely believable. It's like, oh, that feels like a character who DGAF, who has tons of money, can do whatever she wants. Like that I imagine that is how that character would speak and move through the world. And I thought it was really well done. But at the end of the day, I think you're right. Like, if the show is a critique of the US healthcare system, if the show is a critique of, billionaire philanthropists like the Sackler family, it's a rather muted critique, I think, because those are just kind of background. That's not the main thrust of what the show is trying to talk about, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think it's like, it's well done. It's, you know, it's kind of like when you're having a conversation with someone, like on a podcast like This Week in Streaming on Decoding TV, and somebody says, hey, did you ever think about this topic? And you kind of go off and kind of have a little tangent for 5 minutes, and then you go back to the main subject. That's kind of what it felt like the show was doing with those other topics. It's like, hey, this is kind of interesting, and then let's go back to the main thing that we were talking about before. You know, that's kind of what it felt like. So it
felt like a Decoding TV episode, basically.
It felt like a meandering podcast that didn't go anywhere. You know, no.
A meandering podcast between two Asian men.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
That's the vibe I got from Dead Ringers, for sure.
Siddharth, what are some topics that came to mind for you watching Dead Ringers?
I think when you say that certain things are well done, I agree with you when it comes to some of the characters and the texture that they bring to the show. But I think the show's visual texture I found to be incredibly dull. And I don't mean in terms of its mood. I mean in a way where you can't really get a sense of the environment or the details. Or even if you do, you can't really feel their emotional impact. Like, you know, taking the final episode, this climactic thing that happens where Elliot, you know, performs that C-section on Beverly, and there's, you know, there's blood pouring out, and it's meant to be this almost a symbolic cleansing in a way. But regardless of what it's meant to represent, it doesn't really look like blood. It's hard to tell what it, like, my TV settings are fine.
Mm-hmm.
I know that because everything else I watch looks okay. It's just a very low contrast, muddy kind of show.
Yeah,
that it has this look that ends up unfortunately plaguing a lot of streaming shows. I don't really know why that is. I don't know if streamers are just trying to like make sure every TV at every calibration, you know, can have some sense of what's happening. But
I actually don't agree. I agree with you with everything until that last point you made about it sharing the same look as other streamers. There is commentary online about what a like Netflix show looks like these days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this really fits into that category. I agree with you, though. It is low contrast, and in your words, like I can see why people would think it's muddy. I personally like the show's look. I think it is appropriate to the subject matter. I think it is distinct from the visual identity of the film, and I think that it relies a lot on great production design, in my opinion. The way the Mantle Parker Center looks, all these old houses, these billionaire houses, some of them modern, some of them old school, you know, classic architecture. But I agree, it's very low contrast. And the low contrast, or in your words, muddiness, does give the proceedings a kind of sinister dread. Like, I always felt like something terrible is going to happen in this situation. Like there's never a feeling where I had, or never a moment where I felt like this is going to end well for everyone. You know, like I think the look contributed to that, but I actually like the look of it. I think the production design was very strong overall. So, you know, there's a lot of great reveals in the show where you're like seeing a location, you're seeing it revealed, and it's like, oh yeah, like, It's beautifully, thoughtfully, well put together. Just like as an example, the Mantle Parker Center, where there are these like frosted, like these windows that can be like frosted for security, and you're like looking into windows. There's so many moments when one of the Mantle sisters is like leaning up against a window, and you see the reflection, and it's like, do you see that there are two, you know, they're two halves of the same person? Symbolism, you see, Sidon. So I like the look of the show, but I understand why it's not for everyone. So
I do agree with you on the production design front, for sure. I think everything that is within the world of the show is impeccably designed. I just feel like the way it's presented to us, the way those details are presented to us, kind of results in a lack of textured storytelling, a lack of emotional impact of those details. But it does, you know, those details themselves, what little I managed to gauge, you know, look nice.
One thing I really appreciate about the show is that even though it tells one continuous story, it's pretty episodic. every episode stands on its own, with some of them having unique structures. For instance, I think episode 4 takes place over the course of 1 week with some flashbacks and is like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday titles on the screen. I personally think this makes for a satisfying viewing experience, as each episode's kind of like a mini movie. They have different directors, you know, Karen Kusama directed an episode, Sean Durkin directs an episode, and they feel different. They have different styles sometimes. That said, how did you feel the episodic structure worked for you, Siddharth?
So when it comes to television, I like that balance of episodic but continuous. Obviously, it's a tough balance to nail. And a show like Dead Ringers, I think, ends up, I don't want to say it ends up leaning too much on the episodic, but I think because of the lack of an overall structure, the lack of an overall through line, other than like, you know, minor hints here and there about like the pregnancy or the embryos that are being grown in the lab. Apart from those, the things that, you know, connect the episodes are just, you know, the themes, right? And when you don't express those themes to their fullest effect, it can, you know, create this sort of disconnect, where it's like, all right, each of these things is episodic. Each of these episodes tells an individual story. But what is really connecting them beyond the fact that, all right, these two characters are here, and now they're maybe slightly further along here. So it's almost there for me in terms of, you know, finding some kind of balance. But I think it just goes back to the problem of what we discussed earlier, where the themes aren't fully formed or fully expressed until quite late into the show.
Well, speaking of late in the show, Siddharth, I think you had some thoughts about... What did you say?
Oh, I know where this is going.
Well, speaking of late in the show, what were your thoughts on... You had some thoughts to share about the final episode, right? And how important a final episode generally is.
Let's just say the clip you played at the beginning, I don't know if that was intentionally chosen, but it made me grind my teeth. I think for any show to be successful, any show to be remembered as something of a success, it needs to get its final episode right to some degree. You know, what right is of course very subjective, all of that. But I think this one drops the ball in a few major ways. And I think one of the biggest ones is the way it tries to create its haunting atmosphere. Because, you know, for the most part in the episode, Elliot isn't physically present, but they want her to be the sort of looming spiritual presence, almost, you know, like she's haunting Beverly. But the show creates this atmosphere with constant sounds of cell phones buzzing. Like, I know that Beverly is like missing or ignoring Elliot's calls, but after 40 minutes of just the sound of a cell phone going zzz, 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 I was ready to just throw something at my TV. Like, again, I get what it's trying to do. Like, she is this imposing presence in Beverly's life, but I'd like to be annoyed with a character, not with the show itself, to the point that I felt like, I don't know, I was going to become the Joker or something, because I have legitimately never seen an episode of television that is more grating and irritating than that, in a way that made me want to turn it off.
I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I'm just going to put that out there. I thought it was amazing.
All right, great talking to you. I'm going to go.
In episode 6, for those who are listening who haven't seen the show for some reason, throughout most of the episode, you hear the iPhone vibration sound of someone calling in as part of the audio bed of the episode. So, like, throughout many points throughout the episode, you hear, like, kind of this cell phone ringing in the background. And it is a symbolic representation of how Elliot continues to be on Beverly's mind despite all the stuff that has transpired between the two of them. And I thought it was amazing, you know? You know, Siddharth, you're probably one of those people that's like, why can't we hear people talking in Christopher Nolan movies? You know,
no. Some people. No, absolutely not. I'm the opposite of that. How dare you?
Some people want to push the medium of cinema and the moving image forward by experimenting with audio in different ways. And I don't think they should be restrained. Okay,
I don't think so either. But you don't hear me going up to people and just like yelling in their ear and going it's an experiment. You get it? Ah.
I have never seen it done like that before. I've never seen a TV episode or a movie where it's like throughout the whole movie you're hearing a cell phone vibrating ring. And I just thought it was like, wow, what an amazing way of putting us into the perspective of the main character. And also when she finally answers the call, it's like you breathe this sigh of relief. Oh, like, oh, it's over. And it's like this amazing cathartic moment that you wouldn't have had if they didn't do that. Do you know? I loved it. I thought it was amazing. I was like so blown away by it. But okay.
You want me to keep doing that?
I do. I do. It would be more spot on about this subject than your previous comments have been.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
Anyway, well, those are a couple of specific topics we wanted to discuss regarding Dead Ringers Season 1. Before we move on, I want to talk about the fact that this week's episode of This Week in Streaming on Decoding TV is brought to you by the McDonald's app. Here's a question, Siddhanth. You know, do you think that these people's situation could have been improved if they had free food? Because I think so. I think a free Big Mac at McDonald's, a free McChicken at McDonald's, some free fries on your way home from the Mantle Parker Center after a long day at work, that would really help lighten the mood, and I think would have made things a lot better for all the characters in the show. And if you are interested, Siddhanth is unconvinced, but I think he's wrong, as with the case about the cell phone. What's great about the McDonald's app is if you order with the app, you get points for ordering and you can redeem those points for free food. McDonald's is giving away free Big Mac, free fries, whatever else you love at McDonald's. All you have to do is order something in the app and it earns you points towards free food. Siddhanth Dadlaka, let me ask you this question. If you could have one thing for free from the McDonald's menu forever, what would it be? I'll go first. Big Macs. I'm a big fan. Used to eat a Big Mac once a week. My mom used to take me to, you know, McDonald's, and always loved that, how substantial a Big Mac was, but also it's also kind of like small. It's kind of like it's easily manageable to eat. Big fan of Big Macs. Would love a lifetime supply of Big Macs through the McDonald's app. You have a favorite McDonald's dish, Siddhanth?
I would order just anything, everything. Like, I enjoy everything at McDonald's. Yeah, it's fine.
Excellent. Well, earn free food with the McDonald's app. Would strongly suggest that the app works really, really easily. It's fun to use. And it is available at participating McDonald's. Copyright 2023 McDonald's. Thanks to McDonald's for sponsoring this episode of Decoding TV. All right, thanks, Ronald. Let's move on. Let's talk about some of the other stuff that happened in Dead Ringers. I mean, I think where I really felt the show went off the rails a little bit was the subplot with their assistant slash maid slash what have you, Greta, right?
Yeah.
Where at the end, you're wondering, like, why is Greta accumulating both personal effects, private media, and also DNA from the Mantle sisters? And the answer is she's using it as part of an art piece in order to work out her own issues about her birth and her mother's passing, I think, which you find out in literally the last episode of the show. And it was at that point that I'm like, there's sometimes when you watch a show and you're like, okay, I think the storytelling has gotten a little bit out of control. That felt like that was when I started seeing the seams of the show. I started seeing like, oh, you're just trying to cram in a bunch of different ideas into the show and they don't all necessarily work. I mean, did the Greta thing land for you at all in any capacity?
Initially in the first couple of episodes, it had me intrigued, but in a very like passive sense, like, I wonder what's going on. I wonder if they're going to tell us. And I don't know. I was just led to assume, I don't remember if it was the show that did anything to make me think this, that part of what Greta was collecting may have led to Elliot using Beverly's,
right, Everly's
eggs, or DNA.
Yeah, that's right.
I think maybe, but also at the same time, like, you could also be right that it could all just be part of like that project she was working on, which was also not some secret thing she was doing, apparently. It was like just out in the open.
I think it was somewhat secret, because it's not like, I mean, there's a shot at the very final episode with Genevieve, and I think it's Beverly, or Elliot walking past it. Genevieve with one of the sisters walking past it. So it's like they are either really don't care about their employees' artistic passions, or they didn't know about it. You know, was kind of my interpretation. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I feel like if they were walking past it without really paying it much attention,
yeah,
wouldn't that imply that they were already like aware of it? Like it didn't pique their curiosity? Maybe they were too preoccupied. I don't know.
Well, yeah, they had a lot of stuff on their mind. I don't know. I think you can have various interpretations of it, but
yeah, either way, it wasn't a secretive, like, nefarious purpose. It was for the purpose of presenting something in public in association with the Mantles.
Yeah. And I just think it's a thing that completely didn't land for me at all. Like, it's just like, there is not enough here for this to be a thing, unfortunately. And go ahead.
I'm sorry. You could remove Greta from the entire show and not really lose anything.
Yeah, which is kind of a bummer. I really enjoyed the dinner scene, I think, in episode 4, when she's kind of, they're interacting with her and it's like very stressful. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a great scene. And so I think she added a lot to that. But in general, I think you're right about that. And that's kind of a bummer. And honestly, I had a bunch of different thoughts about it. So on the one hand, I was thinking to myself, oh, these people who wrote they just crammed in a bunch of stuff and they didn't care if it made that much sense. But I also, what also struck me, Siddhanth, is a show like Dead Ringers, because it has one actor playing two roles, every shot needs to be planned out.
Yeah.
And sometimes what can happen is, in a case of like the Greta storyline, maybe you get to the end of the Greta storyline and you're like, oh, this isn't quite working. But like, you've already planned out literally every single shot in the show. You can't really change it at that point. You know, you can't change the plan at that point, maybe because everything. My guess is it needs to be more strict. Like, the way the shots are done needs to be more strict than in a kind of run and gun type situation. And so maybe that's an example of like, hey, they got late into the process and they realized, hey, the Greta thing's not working. But like, we can't just change course because like, we already have the shot and it, you know, we need to, it all ties in together. So that's like the more charitable interpretation, is like, maybe logistically they couldn't improve the Greta situation because they just didn't have the resources or the time, you know?
Maybe.
Because this is a show that it's just a very specific kind of show. So let's talk about the very ending, Siddhanth, and then let's talk about, and then I want to talk about the movie. So the ending of Dead Ringers, the TV show, Beverly decides, hey, I can't be happy. I'll never be happy. Therefore, so I'm with you so far. That makes sense. Therefore, you must kill me and replace me. wasn't sure how we landed at that as the option. But I am curious. So then what happens is Elliot operates on Beverly, takes her kids out via C-section, cuts her own abdomen up to make it look like she has C-sectioned herself, I guess. And then like takes Beverly's place. Now, there is a scene afterwards where Elliot is talking to the Parker character, right?
Yeah.
And is saying, hey, where is my sister? Like, is my sister okay? And the Parker character, Jennifer Ely, is like, you know what? We'll take care of that later. Like, I wouldn't worry about that. I think what we're meant to understand is that Parker knows that Elliot and Beverly has switched places, and because she likes Elliot better, and is going to help her make this the new reality, which would also explain how nobody finds Beverly's body at the end. I think like Parker has the we've seen Parker has the resources to just make something like that disappear. Are you following me? Do you think everything I'm saying is right so far? Like, what do you think?
For the most part, I do think that ending interaction seems to imply that Parker has some awareness and is on board with it as long as it benefits, you know, her business, as long as it doesn't interfere with her image.
Right.
You know, as long as everyone else thinks that this is Beverly and not Elliot, it's fine. I don't necessarily know that her reasons are that she likes Elliot better, but I do think we're on the same page about
She does say that earlier, right? She's like, oh, she was my favorite one. Like, Elliot, it's a shame. Elliot was my favorite one. So it's like, okay. I think she really did vibe with Elliot a lot more. But I do have to say, I think the idea of Elliot replacing Beverly does come a little bit out of nowhere. And after watching Dead Ringers, the movie, which I won't, we'll talk about in just a moment. But it comes even more out of nowhere after watching Dead Ringers. Like, Dead Ringers, the movie, felt like that was a good ending for that story.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was like, what did you think of the idea of Beverly wanting Elliot to replace her or, like, climb inside of her or whatever? Like, just your thoughts on that whole thing.
I really had to reverse engineer it in a way. I had to think, wait, okay, she's doing this. So she wants to die because she is not happy and has tried to be. Okay, that kind of makes sense. Fine, because she spent the whole episode, you know, being haunted by the idea of Elliot. All right, sure. To the extent that she would want to forego everything else in her life, I never really, you know, got that sense. I was very unconvinced by most of the things that happened in the finale. I do get why Elliot would want to replace Beverly to kind of have everything that she has and all that. But, you know, just everything it represents symbolically is it. I don't want to say it feels at odds with what we've seen so far. It just doesn't feel like a natural outcome of it. You know, I really strain to be like, okay, you know, she's doing this. Fine. I get it. Whereas with the movie, like you said, you know, it's equally violent and destructive and in some ways, you know, abstract and symbolic what happens. But it makes sense in the context of what we've seen in the movie with the way things are presented, the dynamics that we've seen, and the ways the twins talk to each other and, you know, discuss their lives.
Yeah, I think the show has done a good job of saying why Beverly feels incomplete without Elliot. Like that, that part makes sense. The part that is a little bit more straining of my credulity is therefore the solution is for Beverly to die and Elliot to replace her. It's not completely out of nowhere, but it's just kind of like, I don't know that the show fully earned that as the final concept. Because it's not like, oh, Elliot is the most complete version. Throughout the whole show, it's not like the show has been saying, like, Elliot's the most complete version of me, right?
Yeah.
What you get a sense of is that the twins are incomplete without each other, and that's...
Yeah.
That comes across really well. So that does not then lead to Elliot should replace Beverly. The other thing that I've seen people bring up is this idea of Genevieve has already demonstrated that she can tell the difference between the twins. Early on in the show. And so would Genevieve really buy that Elliot is now Beverly? You know, like, would she really go along with it? Does she know that that's happening? You know, like, do you have any opinion on whether Genevieve is aware of it? I think we are meant to think she is not aware of it, but what do you think?
Yeah, in a logistical sense, I'm willing to go along with it. I can't help but feel like we're supposed to think about this, you know, in a more abstract way the movie presents its conclusion. Like this, you know, idea of, you know, what is jealousy? What is envy? You know, do you want what some other person has, or do you want what they are? And, you know, I get the idea symbolically, like where it's coming from. It's just that it doesn't build the right foundation. So I think that's then what might lead me to question, but wait a second, who found the body? Does Genevieve know? Because it's one that doesn't sit right in my gut to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So from there on out, it's like, wait, but Genevieve can tell the difference. So,
Yeah, it's a weird ending. I think it's a little bit weird. And then like knowing what the themes of a show are, and then knowing how the movie ended, feels even weirder. So, any other thoughts on Dead Ringers the show? If not, let's move on into comparison between Dead Ringers the movie and Dead Ringers the show.
One, I guess, tiny little, I guess, Easter egg is the fact that Genevieve is acting in a miniseries called Rabid, mm-hmm. which appears to be based on David Cronenberg's 1977 film, Rabid.
Mm, very cool.
Yeah. I know it had...
a Prime Video exclusive in the universe of the show.
Yeah. So some nice. Meta fake marketing for itself, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one other thing I wanted to say before we move on into Dead Ringers is I really love the way that they created the Mantle twins in the world of the show. Like,
yeah.
One of my favorite scenes is Beverly and Elliot in an elevator, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of standing next to each other. One of them's looking to the right, and then the other one's looking straight at the camera. And they're kind of talking. And it's very, you know, and in your mind, you're thinking to yourself, oh, I know how they did this. They just filmed it with her on one half, and then they filmed it with her on the other half. And then at one point, one of them reaches out and touches the other one's hand. And there's just a lot of moments like that where it's like, very, very subtle, where it's not showy. It's just like, hey, here's a moment where they're both talking, and then one of them reaches out and touches the other. And it's like, you know, that requires a lot of planning and foresight and thought. They can't just find that on the day. They need to have planned for that. And there's a lot of like moments like that where movie magic, baby. I'm just like, wow, this is amazing. We're watching one person become two, and that's really well done. So, okay. Those are our thoughts on Dead Ringers Season 1. Despite its many issues, I still loved it. I found it an incredible cinematic experience. Siddhartha Dlaka did not. But let's talk about Dead Ringers, the movie, and compare it to the show. I will say we're going to spoil the movie. So like, if you haven't mm-hmm. seen the movie, we're going to spoil that now. This is a pretty solid Cronenberg movie, Siddhartha Dlaka. I mean, upsetting material, upsetting stuff, upsetting gadgets. But I think the movie is a lot simpler. There's no billionaire investor. There's no assistant who's making her art exhibit. It's just, this is really about the two halves, like these two twins feeling like each one is incomplete with the other. And David Cronenberg used these words to describe the Mantle twins, that I really like. I've been thinking about it ever since I read about it. He described Dead Ringers as about the unrequited life. And I thought that was just a really interesting way of talking about it, because that's what the movie's about. And I think it really lands that point well. What do you think, Siddhartha Dlaka?
Yeah, I agree with that. And just really quick for the listeners who may have seen the show but not the movie, Jeremy Irons plays characters named Beverly and Elliot Mantle. So those are things that have carried over fairly directly.
It took me back to a day when there was a time when Beverly was a male name. And now it's like not, you don't see many men named Beverly these days. So
And they do acknowledge also in the movie that they both appear to have what are at the time considered feminine names. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
One other thing, Siddhartha, is also
that the story of Dead Ringers was based off of an actual true story. So there is a true story of these twins, like in the New York Times, twin doctors named Cyril and Stuart Marcus were found dead in their apartment. This is in a March 1976 issue of Esquire, right? Mm-hmm. And no one knows cause of death. To this day, like, it was a medical mystery. Why were these twins in the apartment together? Why did they die? You know, no one could make heads or tails of it. And so they wrote a book about it called Barry Wood and Jack Geesland wrote a book about it called Twins. It was made into this movie Dead Ringers that was eventually made into a show called Dead Ringers. Mm-hmm. Now, watching the movie, Siddhartha, and seeing the ending, I was like, wow, this makes so much more sense. Like, thematically, this all ties in together so much better than the show, in my opinion. Like, these people are incomplete. and it's like, and they can't be made complete without each other, and so they descend into madness and then they die. Like, that's, that makes a lot of sense thematically, as opposed to one of them replaces the other. It didn't, if the point is that they're incomplete without each other, the ending of the show didn't really tie together for me. Anyway, what did you think of the thematic nature of Dead Ringers? And it seems like you liked the movie more than the show, right?
I really did. I think, you know, first of all, just the parable of the Siamese or conjoined twins, Chang and Ang. I think that it, you know, they bring up, you know, those historical figures quite a lot. And without being direct about it, it does stand in for the way that they, you know, feel about each other. The fact that they are, you know, so to speak, joined at the hip. And, you know, it is absolutely bad for them. It is toxic, obviously, but separating them would kill them. And I think it becomes a sort of paradox where, you know, they can't live with each other, can't live with without each other. Whereas in the show, I think another reason the conclusion doesn't feel right is because we have seen time and time again up until the final episode that, yeah, Beverly is better off without Elliot. And so this voice at the back of her head with the buzzing cell phone and the baby sister, baby sister, baby sister, that doesn't feel like a natural outgrowth of the five episodes that we've seen before.
Right. Whereas in Dead Ringers, the movie, they're kind of equally toxic and terrible, right? In some ways. Yeah. Or equally self-destructive in the movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, I think, go ahead.
I think also the movie, you know, aesthetically nails what the show is trying to do. It does it a lot better because, first of all, you can see all the details. Second, it gives you this very gray and sort of sterile, you know, no pun intended, they are fertility doctors, this sort of sterile feel where then the, you know, the colors will then like pop out. Like every time you see a bit of red, it's like, all right, that is something deeply symbolic. That is something disturbing. It's something that catches your attention, whether it's blood or something in the design. Whereas in the show, red, black, brown, they all just kind of look very similar to each other. But yeah, in the movie, I also appreciate that the distinction between the twins isn't as clear. You know, after a while, you catch on in the movie, right? That, okay, this one is Beverly, this one is Elliot. You know, maybe a slight difference in the hair, slight difference in the behavior. After a while, I found what Rachel Weisz was doing on the show to be like, all right, she's, you know, as Elliot, she's so over the top and, you know, acts out so much that it felt after a while that it wasn't a real person, but a performer trying to differentiate two characters. Do you get what I'm saying?
I don't agree with you about that part, but one of the things
just in
I like
specific moments, I think her performance overall is great, but in specific moments where she is acting out and being obnoxious, it starts to stray into a realm of, you know, a realm that I can't necessarily.
I never felt that way because the show does something very smart, which is it has Beverly have one hairstyle and Elliot have another hairstyle. And in general, you can easily tell them apart, whereas that's not the case in the movie. Now, you could argue that is by design in the movie. And I think this is an interesting detail that, like, originally Jeremy Irons was going to have two separate changing, like, they wear different clothes. So he's going to have one changing room for Elliot and one changing room for Beverly. And Jeremy Irons decided he wasn't going to do that because you're supposed to, each of the twins is supposed to take on characteristics of each other throughout the movie. And you are supposed to have difficulty telling them apart by the end. Again, another thing that I think the movie does well that is not really carried out in the show. So overall, I think the movie does a good job of just kind of landing this basic idea. I do want to also call out something that my wife shared with me, which is that one of the experiences that women have in the American healthcare system is going to a doctor, not just women, but many times women have, and probably at proportions or at frequencies at a much higher rate than men, is the experience of going to a doctor and leaving with the impression that there's something wrong with your body. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, there is an affliction, but it's like something you're doing something wrong or there's something wrong with your body. right. being ignored when describing how like describing symptoms and so on and so forth. And this is an experience my wife has had. And I think that this is a movie that, aside from being extremely upsetting when it comes to the gynecological instruments for mutant women, kind of carries forth that idea where like there's this horrifying scene where I think it's Beverly at that point is examining a woman and is saying like, there's something wrong. Like, you're not using the instruments right. You know? And it's like a very like upsetting, but you know, incisive commentary on the medical system and how it treats women. And in that regard, I would say both the show and the movie do, I think, a relatively good job of landing that metaphor slash critique. So I wanted to acknowledge that. But anyway.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about Dead Ringers, the movie? I was very impressed by the way they did the twins. You know, motion control cameras. There's a couple moments that are kind of silly. Like, there's a moment when I think it's during a dream sequence, you find that Beverly and Elliot are attached by some kind of placental organ between the two of them. And it's very clearly a double for Jeremy Irons is one of the twins, you know? Mm-hmm. But in general, I thought the way they did the illusion of having one person play two people was very convincing. Do you agree, Siddhanta Dlaka?
For sure. Because again, obviously the technology was different from what it is now. It was a little harder to execute in the 1980s than it would be in 2023. But I think, you know, I think for the most part, it was seamless, even when, you know, the camera's moving, because that's a much harder thing to execute than like we discussed, like than a locked off shot.
Yeah.
It's much harder to execute because you have to be very precise, but at the same time, it has to feel spontaneous when it comes to the performances, when it comes to the interplay between the two versions of yourself. And I think, speaking of which, I think that's something that the movie pulls off better than the show is the feeling that, you know, yes, even though these are twin characters, in a spiritual sense, this story is about the parts of yourself that are at war with each other. These warring instincts to be perhaps cruel and kind, perhaps to, you know, take advantage of someone or to love them. And I think by separating the mantles as much as the show does, by giving them such separate lives, even though Elliot has the desire to, you know, whether it's be with Beverly or be more involved in her life, I think by separating them as much as it does in the plot, you don't always get the feeling that they are as entwined as the Jeremy Irons version, which, you know, always ends up not just, you know, working better, I think, on an artistic level, you know, in an abstract sense, but also literally because it's about a toxic codependent relationship. I think that's just another reason that the ending in the movie works as well as it does, because, yeah, the only way out for these twins is to, you know, separate themselves in a very physical way, perform this procedure the way you would separate conjoined twins or Siamese twins. And that's, you know, symbolically, that's what's happening, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas, I don't know, I'm wondering if the Rachel Weisz versions are too different from each other for this to work in the same abstract way as the movie does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in the movie, one of the things I thought was really interesting was the idea of one of the characters going on withdrawal. And then, like, I think it's Elliot that's like, I need to be in sync with my twin. I need to take the exact pills, the exact same pills as my twin is taking. So, like, my body chemistry is the same. And that was a really interesting idea of, like, to try to, that they needed so desperately to be in sync. And not an idea that I think fully lands in the show as well. Go ahead. Finish what you're saying. Yeah.
And I'm wondering, as an extension of that, like, I know the show wants to touch on certain aspects of, you know, women's healthcare and the American healthcare system, but I wonder if, first of all, you know, in making them experts in birthing rather than fertility, specifically just, you know, fertility.
Yeah.
I wonder if the show makes them too virtuous in their work. And whereas the Jeremy Irons versions, you get more of a sense that what they're doing, you know, other than the fact that they are good at it, has to do with control. And I don't know, it's something that maybe this is just my expectation. Like, you know, I was hoping for something similar and, you know, didn't come about. But yeah, I'm wondering if, like, there's more of an opportunity even within the new premise in the Amazon version to, I don't know, present a slightly more fucked up dynamic than they did, other than just they're trying to make the world better. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, I think what's watching the movie really does reveal the weaknesses of the show, because because it's like, oh, this was the baseline that they operated at. And then you think of all the stuff they added into the show. Okay. Think of all the stuff they added into the show. So it's like, okay, what you said, which is that it's more virtuous. It's they're doing a birthing center. That is great. That I actually think that is the one great change, you know, telling this from a female perspective. I think that is a worthwhile endeavor. And so they had women be the mental twins. They had to be a birthing center. I agree with you about the virtuousness and like the moral changes that entails. But like largely, I think that is like, if you're going to update it, that's a good way to update it. Okay. Billionaires need to fund this new center that they're trying to open. Okay. So then you have this like commentary on the rich. There is this journalist who is writing a story about them.
It's
like, you know, and he's like trying to navigate his own career while doing that and seeing how much he's under the thumb of this billionaire. There is a detour into race and the history of gynecological science and how it was done on, you know, how experiments were done on black women that were like that helped to build the foundation of the science we have today. And there is this woman that works for them who collects their DNA material. And it's like, these are all the things that were added on to, that were not in the movie at all, that were added on. And none of them really amount to all that much, I have to say. Like, they're not bad. You know, I didn't have a bad time. I didn't think they was like, were completely a waste of time. But it's not like any of those plots that I just said really paid off in a huge, satisfying way, right? Like, I liked every single actor, and I liked, like, moments from those plots. And so I still think it's worth checking out. It could have been like poorly done versions of those. But the movie, I think, is really simple and clean, ironically, by comparison. And that's why I think it's really effective. So
yeah, it's streamlined in comparison.
Yeah, totally. Totally. All right. Any other thoughts, Sinath Adlaka, on Dead Ringers the movie or Dead Ringers the show?
Go Cronenberg, man. That's it. Yeah.
Well, I do want to let people know that if you enjoy this podcast, you can find more episodes at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of This Week in Streaming and the podcast in general. And find us on TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at decodingtv, where we're posting new videos all the time. And we are going to talk about our favorite quotes from Dead Ringers. Before we do that, though, I want to ask Sinath Adlaka where we can find more of your work until we see you again here on Decoding TV.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Siddhant Adlaka. And like I said, at Can, I'll be covering stuff for IndieWire, Truthdig, JoySauce, Inverse, and IGN. So a whole bunch of different places, which will all eventually end up on my Twitter.
I want to acknowledge that next week on This Week in Streaming, we are going to be covering Mrs. Davis. We're going to be wrapping up season one. Dan Gavazin is going to be here. That episode will come out a little bit later in the week because I think the final episode of season one of Miss Davis airs next Thursday. So we'll be coming out on Thursday or Friday of next week. But you can look forward to that, and as well as announcements about what else we'll be covering. We'll be doing Barry in a couple weeks and maybe more things in the future like that. Let us know what you want us to cover at decodingtv@gmail.com. Okay. Sinath Adlaka, your favorite quote from this batch of episodes of Dead Ringers?
At the very end, when Genevieve bursts in and says, Beverly, to Elliot, who just appears to have given birth. Because one, it means, you know, the switcheroo has worked, the ruse has worked. Two, it was the last line of the show and I was free.
It was a really, it's a really effective moment because it kind of smash cuts to black, if I recall correctly. It's like she says her name and you expect the scene to continue and then boop, you're in the credits.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really well done. I mean, I'm sorry you didn't like the show, Siddhanth, but I appreciate you watching it and chatting about it with me. So
I like you. It's fine.
One of my favorite quotes is from the journalist in the show who is writing a profile. He plays Silas Jordan, great journalist name. And he says at one point, people matter. They aren't just matter for Elliot's experiments, which is a nice turn of phrase and also a reaffirmation that Elliot must be stopped at all costs. So, all right. That's This Week in Streaming here on Decoding TV. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to Siddhanth for joining me for the first 6 episodes of This Week in Streaming. We're wishing him best as he heads off to Cannes. And we'll see you here again soon, Siddhanth. And listeners, we'll see you here again next week. Goodbye.